And like you said, the real top galleries really only deal with your work once you're dead. So, you know.
Yeah.
Best not worry about it now. Just make sure you put labels on the back.
Yeah. Hi, everybody, and welcome to episode 145 of Art Juice. This is honest, generous, and humorous conversations to feed your creative soul and get you thinking with me, Louise Fletcher.
And me, Alice Sheridan.
And this week, our main topic is a follow-on from last week's episode when I spoke to Sarah Collier from Silts and Contemporary. And she gave her advice about what to do to get into a gallery, how to work with galleries, what not to do, etc. But we had a listener question related to our choices with regards to galleries, and we thought that would make a good follow-on main topic. So that's what we'll be chatting about shortly. But first, I just want to catch up because I know Alice has had a busy week. So what have you been up to, Alice?
I have been to Manchester Art Fair, which was fantastic. It was the first art fair. So I've done open studio event, but it was the first art fair since the week before lockdown. And I'd been a little bit buoyed by going to visit the other art fair in London. That was fun. But the reality of doing it, the packing up, it fits quite well with this week, actually. You know, packing up, the driving. This is the first time that I'd done one where I had to be away from home. So on top of the getting everything ready, hanging it, I also had to allow for a day's drive at either end, hotels, being in a new city, working out everything that I needed to, you know, keep body and soul presentable for 4 days over different things. So it was quite a big thing. So I was a little bit looking forward to it and a little bit thinking, oh, what a pain. But it was really good fun. There were, you know, all of, as always, these things are quite tiring and it goes in ebbs and flows and it has those waves of, oh, I've got all the way here. Nobody's going to be interested. Nobody's going to buy anything, you know, all of that stuff. So I'd forgotten that kind of emotional roller coaster element of it. And either I'm 2 years further on or the fact that it was further away. I am tired this week and I've been home and I've spent the last 2 days packing boxes, wrapping, rolling prints, ordering big couriers for the States, not for this, from what I sold beforehand. So I'm kind of pooped and I've done no painting whatsoever.
How was the fair as an art fair?
It was good, actually. It was really, I think, very well organized. It was the first time I'd done it and I broke my golden rule, which is to always go and visit before you book something, simply because of the distance and also because, you know, I didn't have the time when I was booking it. But I really liked the venue. So it's in what was the old train station in Manchester, which is beautiful. So these lovely, huge, high steel arch roof. And when we were unloading on the first day, they had huge, and it's one massive great big space, so they divided it. So the front space when you came in was all the artist display booths, really beautiful, you know, white booths, tall, all very well put up. Then there was a cafe area, then there was an artist storage area, which was so useful, and I've never had that at anything else. And that was really, really useful. And then there was huge, great cavernous space at the back as well. I mean, obviously, it's got the capacity to be an absolutely mammoth exhibition centre. But very, you know, very beautiful. But when they had the huge side bays open for loading, I thought, oh, this is going to be a cold venue with all this air. But I don't know how they heat it, but it was nice temperature. The only thing that I would say is the floor was concrete. So standing on concrete was harder on my feet than I noticed than other art fairs that I've been doing. So next time I will very definitely take different shoes. And no, I did not wear those red heels the entire weekend. Anybody who saw my photos, that was just private view night. I did have trainers, but I think I'll have even paddier somethings for next time. And what else? The unloading, because my car was away on a pre-booked parking ticket for 4 days, doing the wrapping up and then waiting for the unloading slot at the end just takes a little bit of time. But other than that, loved it.
I think there's something very tiring about just the fact of being in a different place, on top of the fact that an art fair is tiring, because I came in to visit just to look around and drove into Manchester, which I don't do. And even that was exhausting because you got navigating your way around a strange city, because Leeds is really my city. So Manchester is a bit strange to me, and finding a parking space and finding your car afterwards because you forget which way you came out, all of that. Yeah. And that was just to visit. If you're staying, you're also, it sounds stupid, but as humans, we've got this anxiety that we've got to eat, we've got to find sustenance, yeah, we've got to find safety and all of that. And I think that plays in the background when we're in a strange place. It's okay when you're on holiday, but when you've got to work as well,
yeah,
that makes it very, I think it just, that's why it's so much more tiring.
Yeah. I mean, my initial plan was drive up early on Friday, hang, do private view. And I'm so glad I didn't do that. I must have been cuckoo when I thought that was possible. So it did help that I was up there in advance. And certainly by the end of 4 days, I was like, oh, I know where I'm going. I go down this street. And, yeah, you know, I'd worked at all the one-way systems. And what actually worked really well is obviously they had timed entry tickets because they wanted to avoid having, you know, crush of people at different times. And that worked really well because usually at these events, you get kind of swells of people. It usually gets busy late morning, maybe not so busy right first thing. Sometimes you get a little bit of a lull over lunchtime. This was kind of continuous. Or both days. The tickets were sold out. And I think that also means that there's a little bit more commitment. I don't know what the show up rate is. That would be really interesting. But I think often as visitors for these things, we think, oh, I'll go this weekend and then something comes along or you don't feel like it. But if you've got your pre-book time ticket, you kind of go because you've got your ticket. So I think it was interesting that it did mean that there was a nice consistent flow, which was great. But it also meant that it was very hard to grab 5 minutes and shove some food in your face.
Yeah. I must just tell you of an experience we had as a do not do. So I was with my mum. So my mum's 81. Sorry, mum, if I've got that wrong. She's in jeans and a little cagoule. She doesn't look like your average art buyer. She's not really. She's there out of interest. But we were looking around and actually both of us were planning on buying something. So she wanted something for their living room. I was just generally willing to buy something. We went to a booth that which I think was students. I think it was young. They were very young. But we walked in and this girl who was at the booth, she went, hello. Like really patronizing. And then she went, are you having a nice look round then, to my mum? And it was just, she just clearly was saying, obviously you're not going to buy anything here. Obviously you're not interested. So I'll just condescend to you. And I was like, oh, that is the worst. And then we had lovely experiences with other people who were really friendly, but
you know what you should have done? You should have got a huge, great big thing of cardboard and wrapped it in bubble wrap and walked past like Julia Roberts going, big mistake, huge, huge. Never, never, never make assumptions or underestimate who talks to you at art fair stands.
It's so obvious to see when you are walking around with someone who doesn't look necessarily like an art buyer. It's so interesting to see which artists are rude and which are friendly. But I discovered an artist there that you already knew of, but I was absolutely fascinated by. And everybody go look up Ian H. Williamson, and it's spelled I-A-I-N. He's on Instagram, and they're very abstract. They're very like urban abstract. They remind me of Jason Craighead, who is one of my favorite painters from North Carolina. And when I looked up Ian on Instagram, he follows Jason Craighead. So I was like, oh, okay. So there is, I'm seeing that connection. But they were fascinating. And what I was just amazed by were they were on unprimed canvas and they were not layers. And yet the designs were perfect and they were instinctive and spontaneous. So I found that fascinating because to get a good design for me is several layers of working through problem solving. And these didn't look like he pre-planned them on small sketches and then made them. And yet the designs were so captivating. So I just found his work fascinating.
They're quite graphic, really big, aren't they? I wonder, I don't know actually from his whether his background is in design.
Yeah, I don't know. It looks like it must be. Must have a really good grounding in that because, yeah, anyway, I found that fascinating. Tried to explain to my mom why that was better than some of the others. And she was like, but she did say, I can see, as we were driving home, she said, I can see why Alice's and that man you liked were better than the others that we looked at that were abstract. I can see they're better, but I still don't want them on my wall.
What else did you feel, though?
To look like something.
What else did you feel as a visitor?
I felt it was very nice to walk around. So as you said, yeah. Well organized, not too crowded until about lunchtime. It did get a bit crazy, but well organized, good artists, but also a bit of a mixed bag. I found it a mixed bag in terms of quality.
Yeah.
But everything like that will be. And that's fine because I'm sure the visitors are looking for different types of things and you don't want you don't necessarily want everything to be homogenous. But I think as a visitor, I would have preferred it to be more selective.
Yeah. My feeling is that, so it's quite an interesting show because almost one end of it, it has galleries there as well with larger stands, obviously with multiple artists on. And then the other end is self-representing artists. So that was one of the things I thought was quite interesting because in the UK, obviously, we have the Affordable Art Fair, which is huge, which is all galleries. So it can be visually very daunting to look around because there's a lot to see. And I thought this was kind of quite a nice hybrid. I also felt that it wasn't as curated and selected as the other art fair shows are. I didn't think it was quite on the same selection level as that. But
another thing, as a visitor, I much preferred the self-representing artist booths, which we'll come on to when we talk about galleries, but they're better to look at because the gallery booths are a complete mishmash of all sorts and really varied, even though you would think each gallery, so there were some high-end galleries like the Whitworth was very curated and had
Solhay Gallery, I really liked their stuff.
Yeah, but most of them were kind of, there was a lot going on, whereas when you look at an individual artist booth, you get in their curated selection of their work, and so it's more enjoyable, I think, to look at.
Yeah.
And as you say, easier, so I can digest your paintings when they're all together, but if I'm going to see two of yours and two of someone else's, that's just personal preference, though. But we thoroughly enjoyed ourselves and it was definitely worth driving over for.
Yeah, it was great. It was worth going up. I wonder how it compares to Edinburgh. That was the only...
I was thinking
what else is there in different parts of the country that are on similar levels. So, yeah, anybody who's done both or been both.
There's one in York, which is very nice. Similar, I would say. Similar level. I've only been to that once. That's very well attended and I think quite successful, but I haven't been to the ones in Scotland. So yes, if you know, let us know in the comments on this podcast when we post it on Facebook. So I'll be very brief because I haven't had a very exciting week, but I'm doing something a bit different, which is I'm working on this big series of paintings for this exhibition next year, but usually I leave everything, work on paintings, don't fully finish them, then come back to them at the end, finish, and then do all the finishing work. And this time I realized I'm leaving an open loop in my brain that's too much. There are like 15 paintings finished now. If I call those unfinished and just put them aside, it's too much. My brain is
getting overwhelmed. They're all still hovering.
I decided to, no, they're finished. Or if they're not, I'm finishing them. And I'm treating this as a series and finishing, and then I'll carry on. And that feels so good. So I haven't fully varnished them, but I've signed them, I've sealed them, I've painted the edges, and I'm wrapping them loosely to put away so that I've got photos and notes so that I can go back and see where I am. But I don't want them hanging around. I want them put away. So I'm doing that at the moment. And that's felt really good because it's
clear. That sounds so organized.
I know it does. And I copied your bags that you made.
Oh yeah.
So Alice put a video up somewhere that you'd made these bags, just like storage bags that you slip your paintings into out of the stuff that you put under floors.
Yes.
which I had some of. So dragged that out and got my work experience student yesterday making up bags with tape. And that was really good. So they're slipped inside there, they're put aside, yep. And I feel like now I can start again.
They're not massively durable, those, but they did the job for me. And I think for keeping things easily without taping bubble wrap in a place that's secure, but you just want to keep the dust off, I think that they do a great job and super cheap, weren't they? What's that stuff? It's about £20 for a roll of 25 metres of it.
Yeah, so, yeah. Not expensive. And I also thought, you know, if I take the paintings when they're framed, I made the bags big enough so they can go back in framed. If I take them to the gallery like that, then when they sell one, it's easy for them to slip it into the right size bag and hand it to somebody who's carrying it away. Or use it as the initial packaging. So yeah, good idea. So
and I like the fact that they're very slightly transparent too.
Yeah.
You can kind of see what's in it. It's
I
all
even
very well,
put a label on Alice with the title. Look how organized I am. I made a flap and then I stuck the flap down with the label.
The thing that I find with titles is, particularly with recent paintings, is it takes a while for the title to fully embed in my brain with the painting. So once you've just titled them, the title sometimes hasn't quite fully matched up yet, so I'm still like, which one is that one again?
Yeah.
Whereas if I've got a visual of the painting, then I'm like, oh, okay, fine, yeah, and I know exactly which one is.
Yeah, so, yeah. And I might change these titles when I get closer to it, because the whole idea might change. But anyway, so I've had an organizing and clearing week, and I feel good for that. So on to our main topic. Last week I spoke with Sarah Collier from Silsen Contemporary Gallery, and we got a gallerist's perspective on artists and the way artists could and should improve their relations with galleries. And then we had just coincidentally received a question from Helen, and we thought it tied in perfectly as a follow-on to that conversation. And I'm not going to read all of Helen's message because it's a long message, but she is a painter. She's noticed the art world changing, galleries perhaps playing less of a role, more and more artists representing themselves. And she said, I wondered about your take on all of this. I know you're both self-represented, but I'm curious whether it was a conscious decision or whether you were forced into this because galleries don't pay enough attention to each and every one of their artists. And then she says, you know, some galleries do, obviously, but was it our belief that galleries wouldn't do the work for us and it wasn't worthwhile? She said there are an awful lot. She also mentions that 5% of the exhibited artworks in commercial galleries are by women. Now, I don't know if that's in Britain, America, around the world, but she asked if that was a factor in our decision. And then she closed by saying, there are an awful lot of female artists out there that are deciding which path to go down. I suppose the question really is, can a female artist be self-representing and still find her place in the history books? Or is it important that any artist needs to have the testimonial from an established gallery? So what a brilliant question. So I think there's two parts to this. The first is why we decided to do what we're doing, and then the second is, what does that mean for our place in the art world?
Yeah, and she also touches on some galleries seem to do very little for the 50% commission to secure sales, and just basically just how this fits with. It's different routes to market, isn't it, really?
Yeah. I mean, what was your, when you started, what was your reason for doing it for yourself?
My work wasn't good enough to get into galleries.
Yeah, me too.
I mean, you know, I knew it. I think that there are a couple of things here that I think that there are different levels of galleries who you know, just in the same way that artists approach the market in different ways, there are different galleries that approach the market in different ways and represent artists of different status and different standing. And I just wonder if this 5%, what is it, 5% of artists exhibited in commercial galleries, you know, are we talking about things like Bernard Jacobson Gallery, you know, up in Mayfair? Because the artists that I see represented in galleries more like Sarah's that you spoke to last week, actually, I would say probably the majority of artists whose work they show, certainly must be close to 50% or over, are female artists, because she's representing artists who possibly have started going down a self-represented route and are now looking to branch out. And there are a large number of women who do this more than men at that level. So yeah. I think there are two things here, which is like, where are you trying to go with your work? What do you want it to be? And being honest about where you are now. So this idea of finding your place in the history books, honestly, never occurred to me.
No, it never occurred to me when I was starting out. What I wanted when I started out was, can I make this my living? Mm. Can I make this support me? Because I would like doing this more than anything else that I can think of. So is it possible to make a living at it? Now, that is perhaps a lack of ambition. You know, maybe that's not thinking big enough. But coming from a background of art isn't even a thing that people make a living at, to imagining making a living at, that's where I came from. I certainly didn't come from a background that would make me think I would have a place in the history books with my paintings. So I might want that now, but I didn't want that when I started out.
Yeah, I don't think either. I mean, it's not your choice. You don't get to choose whether you have a place in the history. That's for other people to judge, you know, and that comes as a result after the fact of doing the work and the commitment and I suppose other people paying attention or not paying attention. I think the people who are in the history books, that's not what they set out with.
They weren't necessarily always well known while they were doing it.
No.
That's the point. So I get the point of the question. Is it necessary to be accepted by the leading voices in the art world in order to be considered a serious artist? I get that question. But there are plenty of examples throughout history of people who were not considered that while they were alive. Yeah. Or recently in the UK, at least, there's quite a trend of, and I read about this, particularly being women, quite a trend of older women being discovered very late in life. Mm-hmm. And in one case, and I completely can't remember the name of the artist because I was listening to a podcast on a dog walk and I didn't have anything to write it down, but she had an attic full of massive paintings that she'd spent a whole life doing. Mm-hmm. And she'd just been acknowledged and discovered and was having a big show with a top gallery in London. And that is becoming more common. So I think my approach to that, like Alice, has always been, you just have to make your work and then whatever's going to happen, it'll happen. Mm. And if it's good enough to go in the history books, I believe it will. Like, as long as you don't literally never show anyone.
Yeah.
We're all showing people things on Instagram now. We're not going to get missed if we're that good. But to be more prosaic about it, to go back to it, my decision was, I don't know how to approach galleries. I don't know which ones would want my work. I don't know if it's good enough. But what I do know how to do is sell things in another walk of life. So maybe I can take what I know and use it to build a career. That was my thinking. As just like Alice said, but as it's gone on, now I've got a different set of reasons for not pursuing that. Which are that I'm not convinced of the value of it.
Of the gallery representation.
Yeah, I'm still not convinced. I had an email. I've had two invitations actually recently from gallery owners to submit my work to them. So they've contacted me and then they've invited me to submit, to apply to be in their gallery. And my instinctive thought is, why would I? Like, neither of those were galleries that are so high end that it would be a complete honor and really take my career to another level. So the second one came in through Instagram, and I got this message, oh, I'm open to accepting. Would you like to apply? I've been following your work. And I thought, well, if you've been following my work, either you want it or you don't. And why would I apply to give you half my money? Oh, please, can I give you half my money? That doesn't make any sense.
I really liked what Sarah said last week about how she was nervous about asking artists to come and be in her, because normally it's the other way around, isn't it? We're talking to artists who are worried about approaching galleries. And I think actually a lot of the tips that she gave are things that I think you need to do anyway. So a lot of the things that she was talking about, like photographing your work well, making sure it's properly displayed, properly framed, all of those kind of things, you're not born knowing how to do that. You have to learn how to do that. And if you've got to learn how to do that before you approach a gallery, you've got to learn how to do it on your own anyway. So you need something in the meantime that you're preparing and showing for. That's how you learn how to do things. And that's how I did it. I remember looking around, looking at certain galleries and thinking, wouldn't it be wonderful one day to have my work on display, not necessarily in this gallery, but to have my work on display, looking as cohesive, together, beautifully presented, you know, like something that people want to own. And that has always been my driver. And I don't need a gallery to do that.
Yeah.
I can learn to do that. So that was my thing. It's like, okay, well, that's what I've got to get to. And at the moment, there are things about it that are a little bit amateurish, but that's fine. I'll learn as I go along. But that's what my aspiration has been. And then actually, I found along the way, I have had work in galleries that has sold. Well, I've been approached by some galleries that I haven't been interested in working with. And I do it just like Sarah does. I look at what else is in the gallery and I think, would I like my work sitting alongside this? Do I like how they show it? That's how I choose. But actually, you do get to a stage where you think, why would I do that if I can sell it independently?
Yeah.
I think for me now, I think the question now is, this is just a question, do galleries have more, or do some galleries, or which galleries have more access to clients who are perhaps looking for larger work? That might be something to consider. But I'm not sure. I think a lot of the galleries that we're talking about, that they're still displaying work that is, how to say this, shoppable.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's ultimately, you know, that's what people are looking for, perhaps.
And I think there's two things I wanted to say about this with galleries approaching. You said several galleries had approached you.
Yeah.
And when Sarah was talking, I was thinking we need to do another episode where we give advice to gallery owners about how to approach artists, because if a gallery approaches you and says, Sarah said, it's really important to say, I love your gallery, you know, and here's why I like it. Here's why I think it's a good fit. Well, if a gallery approaches and says, I'm accepting submissions, I've been following you, do you want to apply? That doesn't acknowledge anything about my work. But if a gallery approaches you and says, I've been following you, I love your work, and I love how it's developed in the last year, I think you'd be a great fit for my gallery, I'd be interested in talking to you, that's a very different type of approach. So first, I think there's that part of it. I might consider it if the approach was professional and respectful and gave me a reason, you know, and then they went on to tell me, I have a mailing list of this many people. Mm-hmm. I sell work of this size. I sell work very much like yours, you know, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Rather than treating us like supplicants who need what they have to offer, because we're not anymore. But having said that, there's a level of gallery that might approach you. And then you might think, ooh, if I could be in that gallery, they have artists I really respect who seem way above me. If I could be in that gallery, that would lift my career. But even then, and I'm going back, I'm going to ask you about an experience you had, because even then, I think that comes with a lot of things you have to consider. Because do you remember you were talking to some gallery in London, and they were talking about the number of paintings they would want, and it was really excessive?
There were, yeah, if it's the one that I think you're thinking about, it wasn't necessarily the number that they wanted, but they wanted access to everything. Was that it?
I don't know. It may be. You mentioned that they had one artist who was providing like 50 paintings a month or something. Oh, and well, we talked about it on the podcast, and we were both going,
no.
But that kind of, that's the other side of it, isn't it? Then you've got to start thinking, okay, what comes with that? Because if they are that high end, then they are going to want maybe exclusivity where you can't sell your own work, or maybe so many guarantees of so much work. Maybe they're going to pick through it and reject a lot of it because it's not up to their standards. And that could be quite soul destroying. And these, I'm speaking from conversations I've had with other people, not personal experiences, but I think these are all things to decide too. And it's not to say there's anything wrong with that, but it definitely would give me pause, because doing it myself, I get to make all those decisions myself.
I think one of the things for me is that the way that I've tended to work over the last good number of years is to work on a group of work together, and it gets complete, it kind of, although I do sort of have a rhythm to the year, it sort of gets complete when it's finished. And I suppose if there was a gallery that said, fine, we're going to have a solo of your show of your work, and you're working to that deadline, you do it in groups in collaboration with the gallery so that you knew what work was ready by a certain point. That's honestly, for my, that's quite a lot of forward planning for my brain. And I think that sometimes that can put a little bit of pressure on the creative process. And I suppose I've always felt that my work is always developing. Like I've booked for Manchester next year. And there's also something else that I'm discussing next year for September. But I'm also, with that, that will be showing alongside other artists. I'm thinking, I don't know what kind of work I'm going to be making by September next year. So I'm not quite sure how well that will fit in. So I've quite appreciated that freedom of being able to choose my own route and be ready when I'm ready with it. But I think what you do have to take on board, and this is where it comes back to that 50% issue, is how much work it takes to do that. And I acknowledged at the time, fine, my work is not gallery appropriate yet. I wasn't asking the kind of prices that would make it worth a gallery being interested, quite frankly, because they need to make money too. So, you know, financially, it just wasn't viable. It wouldn't have made any sense for them or for me. So I've got to do it my own way in the meantime. And that means learning a lot of stuff. Are you prepared to do that? And you've got to be honest with yourself. Are you going to do that? And when you do it, you realize that it takes quite a lot, and the galleries earn their 50%.
Yes.
You know, yes. They have a lot of overheads. And there's a lot of work to secure those sales. And I don't think it's easy as a gallery owner, just as it's not always easy as an artist. If you look at some of those big fairs, those stand costs are enormous. And don't forget, you know, they've got to sell twice that just to break even on the stand cost alone, let alone staff costs, transport costs, all of those kind of things.
Yeah. And I remember I mentioned to Sarah, but a few years ago, my friend and I talked like wildly, or maybe we should open a gallery in this little town near us that's quite well to do. And we looked at a couple, or I did most of the looking at the rental spaces and working out the costs. And with business rates and with all the things that come into having a retail space, and then there would have been two of us, but we might have needed part-time help as well to staff it. It just felt impossible. I could see it was almost impossible. Unless you had done a lot of work to build up a big collector base, you had relationships, and that's valuable if you've got that history and, you know, background in the art world. Or if you did it the way Sarah's done it, where you use a space that you own, then that makes it more financially viable. But still, it's difficult. So I agree with you. I wouldn't resent them for taking that money. And we have talked about, you do get to a stage where you think, is it worth it to pay someone else so that I don't have to do all of this packing and sending out and all of that? But to me, that would be a conversation that I would have with a gallery owner to say, look, I know your commission is normally 50%, but I can sell work for you. Like, you have it in your gallery and it will sell through me. Therefore, what I really want is help with the admin side of everything. So can we negotiate that down? That would be my approach, I think.
Do you think a gallery would be open to that kind of negotiation?
I have no idea. But if they weren't, then it doesn't make... Then I go back to, does this make any sense for me?
Yeah.
Because I genuinely could, and you're the same, if you launch a series of paintings, you know that quite a few of them are going to sell immediately. If they're in a gallery, that gallery then is taking 50% of what you promoted. For what? Because you've already, by the time their customers get in, you've already sold the paintings. So the benefit to me, I'm even looking at, can I find someone to just do packing and boxing for me on the occasions that I need it? And then, do I really need anything? But it comes back to, can you be respected beyond a certain point if you don't have gallery representation? And I believe you can. I believe there are other things you can do. For example, publishing a book or several books. Putting on your own exhibitions. Who is it? Steve Martin, the comedian, says, be so good that they can't ignore you. That's the secret to success, is you have to be so good that they can't ignore you. And I really believe that. So if the art world hasn't come knocking on our door at the moment, it's because we haven't done anything original enough or exciting enough or good enough that they would want to.
I think it comes down to what you want out of it, though, doesn't it? And I do think that there is a point where having some degree of recognition is valuable in terms of having those outside eyes on your work. And I think this is where it comes down to, are you having the conversations with people whose approach and experience you respect, who can perhaps push your work a little bit, you know, beyond the purely what's commercially viable? I mean, we've done a lot of talking about, you know, whether they're going to sell it, whether you can sell it direct. That's commerce, isn't it? Whereas we're also talking here about recognition and understanding within the art world. And I do think you can do quite a lot of that on your own. And so I don't think not having it would be any reason to stop. But I do think there comes a point where it is useful. Having said that, there's a lot of people who are recognized in inverted commas, whose work I don't particularly appreciate. It's so subjective.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's so subjective.
Yeah, it really is. And recognition from, you know, from whom? So, for example, if you want that kind of validation and recognition, then I suppose entering those more prestigious shows where your work gets selected and there are prizes and so on is another avenue for doing that if you're self-represented.
Yeah.
showing in, I'm thinking of Faye Bridgewater, who you had on the podcast. I don't know what episode it was, so people have to Google Art Juice and Faye Bridgewater, but she had an exhibition at Glyndebourne, the Opera House. That kind of exhibition, that kind of exhibition space does give outside validation and a kind of recognition that isn't a gallery. So I'm just thinking of different ways that you can do this if you want that without a gallery. I still believe that, I just keep coming back to, if you keep developing your work and it gets good enough and you're sharing and showing it, people will find you. Because the top galleries are constantly in need of new artists. That's just a fact. And so they're constantly looking. But just like...
And like you say, the real top galleries really only deal with your work once you're dead. So, you know.
Yeah.
Best not worry about it now. Just make sure you put labels on the back.
Yeah. It's you know, it's so personal, isn't it? And my attitude to it has changed as my work's developed. So at first I felt like it's way out of my, it's not even in my, you know, in my world. I just need to find an audience and sell my paintings to them. And now I feel more like, okay, I've achieved that. I can do that. Now maybe I would like to work with someone else. Maybe I would like to take my work to a different level, but I don't know what that looks like yet. And I don't, when I come across galleries at the level that would exhibit my work at the moment, it feels like this sounds really arrogant, but I think it's true of you too. I feel like I'm bringing more to the table than they are, because I feel like I'm bringing a big following of loyal people who want to buy my work and who are now asking, can I be the first to see the new series before everyone else? Because I missed out last time. So that means I'm bringing a lot and it has to be a partnership.
I tell you what I think was quite interesting about this weekend and is perhaps worth thinking about. We talk a lot about the connection with the audience that we have through social media and the work you do year round and emails and newsletters and all of that kind of stuff. It's a funny thing at an art fair where most people looking don't know who you are from Adam.
Mm-hmm.
They're not aware, like most people, no clue that there is this podcast or a membership or any of the other things.
Do you know who I am?
No.
Malice Sheridan.
So from that point of view, it's quite gratifying when people come along completely out of the blue and make that decision to buy something. And I think from that element, that's one of the reasons why it's nerve-wracking, don't get me wrong. And particularly now, you know, if I'd been to that art fair and nothing had sold, God, how embarrassing would that be? You know, it would have been embarrassing. And that would have been a huge knock to my kind of confidence. So it wouldn't have stopped me doing what I'm doing, but I would still have felt it. And I think that there's an element of your work and being seen in a gallery or by people who don't have that understanding and relationship with you already, which I think is another angle to this.
Isn't that funny, though? That reminds me of, there's a Brené Brown talk, which I share on one of my courses. And to just get this right, she's talking about, we have all these people who support and love us and believe in our creativity and keep encouraging us. And we're like, yeah, I don't care what you think. I want that guy over there, that guy who doesn't even know who I am. That's who I'm trying to impress.
Yeah.
And isn't that interesting? Because I think maybe I would feel the same. I've never thought about it before, that we would discount people who've committed to loving our art and spent time really learning about us and what we do and feel that it was more valuable that a stranger who knows nothing about us liked something
I'm not
because
sure
that why it's is this, it why
I don't think it's I don't think it's discounting or that the other thing is more valuable. I don't think it's a question of either or. I think it's just an interesting test point that does your work hit home with people who don't have that experience and relationship with you already? And that is both, you know, quite validating and terrifying, you know, to test that. And ultimately, I suppose that's what we're looking for. You know, when we, you know, galleries are seen as the gatekeeper, rightly or wrongly, at different levels. And that's what we're saying is, do you need that kind of approval? And it's probably different from all of us. And I think it shifts as you go. I think we're both saying that at the beginning, we didn't feel, let's put it in these terms, at the beginning, neither of us felt we were worthy. Right. Now we, over time, because of necessity, we've done the work to build a degree of audience. And so the balance of power, as you say, is perhaps in the other direction. It's not like I'm looking to the gallery to create the audience for me.
Yeah.
But I did pay the art fair to create an audience for me. That's what I'm going to the art fair for access to a new audience.
Yeah. Which I don't, I feel like I've got so many more people to reach on YouTube and Instagram and Facebook that I don't want, personally, we've discussed this before, to stand at an art fair hoping that the right people randomly arrive in Manchester on the right day. It just feels to me like I can stay where I am and the world is there. Whereas if I, same for a gallery, so somebody asked me the other day, I've put my work into this gallery and I don't understand why it hasn't sold. Everybody else in the show sold something and I didn't, even though people loved my work, they didn't buy anything. And she's really knocked back by that, as you said. But to me, it just means the right people didn't come to the gallery. It doesn't mean there's anything wrong with what she did because it was selected by the gallerist, etc. It just means the right people weren't there. Whereas if she spent more time building up online, she's got much more chance of finding the right people.
Yeah.
But that doesn't give you the cachet that perhaps a gallery still does. But this brings up another thing. For how much longer is that the truth? Because it's already changed massively in the last 20 years.
Yeah.
In another 20 years, is it going to make any difference if you were in a gallery or not? Or are we going to have moved away from that totally? As the more successful, really well-known artists say, no, I'm not giving you my work anymore. See, this is another thing about galleries. Mm. In the history of art, they always could be the gatekeeper and the public couldn't find the artist without going to the gallery. But now they buy a painting by, let's go back to Ian Williamson at the art fair. He has his work in a gallery. Someone buys an Ian Williamson painting. They immediately go on Instagram and look up Ian Williamson or Facebook or wherever. Now they've got a direct contact to him and the gallery is sidestepped whether or not they want to be for the future. So I just think all this is going to change, because if you're a very capable and successful artist, as soon as you realize, well, I can just hire somebody to pack boxes, I don't have to do that side of things. But all I have to do is send out a mail out and I'll sell my paintings. Why would you anymore need a gallery? So I think in 20 years, it'll be different again.
But I think that this is two different things, isn't it? This is the, do you need a gallery now for commercial viability? Question number one. Question number two is, what do galleries bring to creative consideration and curatorial approval? And I think that second question is still valid.
I think it's valid now, but that's my question, is will it whether be valid
a, yes
in the future?
Because there will still be a huge art market with for artwork that has stood the test of time beyond immediate commercial viability.
I agree with that. But will that be a gallery in a street with a gallery owner that's curating, I just don't think we know what that will look like because it's changed so much already. Why would it suddenly stand still now? It would change, and then it would stay here. It won't do that. So something new will come, whether that will be online curators, whether it'll be art consultants more and more.
Yeah, well, most of those kind of galleries, you know, that's when you get into the things where you can invest in art by buying a hundredth of a Matisse, and it's in an art vault somewhere, isn't it? So you know, that's a totally different level, and like I say, probably usually happens after we're dead, so don't care about it that much.
Now I must go back and just say, I think we were asked specifically about our experience and why we made this choice. Yeah. We have both built up online audiences that are quite large. Yeah. If I know some artists, I just met one last week. Hi, Annie, who came to visit me in my studio. She's a very successful, very well-known artist, always worked with galleries, and is just that generation above me, not a half a generation above me, where internet marketing, she was saying, all of that is like, I don't even know, I don't do that. And so we just have to acknowledge that if you're not interested in internet marketing, if you don't know how, if you don't want, you know, there's lots of reasons why a place like Silsen Contemporary, beautiful gallery with good quality work, is somewhere that you would want to be. I don't mean us to sound like we're putting down galleries, because that's not it at all. We're answering this question from a personal perspective.
Yeah.
There are lots of reasons why you might want to be in a place like that, and why that would really bring an audience to you that you couldn't otherwise access.
Or balance the two. I mean, I think, you know, you can have galleries exclusively as the outlet for your work, and you've just got to then be really organized about where your inventory is, you know, who's got what, and keep an eye on it. You know, don't just send things out to galleries and forget about them. You know, make sure that you know what pieces where, what's selling, review your relationships with those galleries regularly. And there are also plenty of artists who do both. They have one or two galleries that show some of their work throughout the year, but you know, that gallery has got, if you've just got one or two galleries, that gallery's got to sell quite a lot of your work for it to bring the bulk of your income.
Yeah.
So it's just balancing it out. But I think you know, the choice is yours, but either way, you've still got to do what Sarah is talking about last week, which is continually pay attention to the quality of work you're doing, the way you present it, being professional about your, you know, your relationships, your agreements, the consistency of your work, how much you're creating. I mean, galleries want to have relationships with artists who are going to be there.
Yeah.
You know, and still keep making work. So that take it, either of these options take a commitment.
Yes. A different type of work, but still a lot of work.
Yeah.
So I hope that has shed some light on our decisions, Helen, but also helped you maybe think through your decisions and what's important to you. And the same for everybody listening. And just to stress again, because Sarah was so kind to come on, that we are not saying you shouldn't want to be in a gallery like that, or that we wouldn't want to be in a gallery like that. That's still open. We're just saying that we're answering Helen's question about why we made the decisions that we made.
Yeah, in the answer that, I'm not sure it was a decision. It's just the way it happened.
It's always easy to make things look like a decision when you look backwards.
Yeah.
And we've reached our final segment. What has inspired, if anything, this week, Alice?
Actually, I just want to do a mention out for what's inspired. It's not that anything has particularly inspired me this week, only in that you will have heard me in the past talk a little bit about a group of artists that I've sort of worked with a bit over since the summer, actually. And I thought it would be nice to have an end of the year roundup. So that will be happening when this goes out. It will be starting tomorrow. It won't be too late for you to join. So we're doing it from the 1st of December. And it's just going to be a few days together to round up the year. It's not going to be all targety and goal setting for the next year, but it's going to be around this idea of what's inspired. And we're going to call it Soul Smile. And it's going to be a few days of exercises, things to review, things to say goodbye to the year, refocusing on what fills you up. And Megan Woodard Johnson is going to be doing that with me. So you can find the information from that if you go to my website or to my Instagram account. There will be a link for how you can join that. And it's just going to be a totally free and fun, I would say week, it's not going to be a week, it's 4 days, so that we finish by Saturday. So I hope that that's going to be inspiring, because that's the intention. Finish the year on a nice high, settled, ready for next year and whatever next year comes. So that's what's going to be. That's what I've got to get my act and pull together now. We are bursting with ideas. It's just what we can fit into those 4 days together. So that's what we'll be doing. What about you?
Sounds good. I was sent a copy of a book, actually, which I've been really enjoying. So I wanted to mention it. And it is called, I'll just check here, Painting Abstract Landscapes by Gareth Edwards, Cornish painter, and his daughter, Kate Reeves Edwards. And Kate Reeves Edwards is the person who wrote the book with David Menken.
That's what I wanted, yeah.
His art. She's the daughter of Gareth Edwards. He's a very well-known Cornish artist and teacher and does these very atmospheric abstract landscapes. And he's written this book because he says he believes that abstract landscape is kind of very looked down on. Speaking of the art world and curators and all of that, he feels that abstract landscape is very looked down on and not seen as adventurous or interesting or whatever. But he said that throughout his life he's been approached by artist after artist who want to learn how to paint abstract landscapes. And I would say that's the most common subject I get asked about, you know, in my courses. When people are discovering what they want to do, some people want to do figurative, some want pure abstract, but over and over again is, how do I abstract a landscape? And this book is all about how he does it, but also a few other artists, including Lewis Noble, are mentioned or interviewed in the book. There's lots of beautiful artwork. It's a paperback, so it's, I think it's £15 to £17 wherever you buy it. So it's about half the price of some of these more expensive books. But I'm finding it fascinating. About halfway through, he works in oils. So some of it is oil specific, but most of it is just generally specific to how do you look at a landscape? How do you capture what you feel? You know, how do you think about abstracting something? Really interesting and well written and a beautiful book. So if you're looking for something for Christmas, I think it's worth it. So it's called Painting Abstract Landscapes, and it's listed when you go online as by Gareth Edwards.
Isn't that interesting, that idea of abstract landscapes being looked down upon? I mean, I think that goes back to what we've been discussing today, really, is that actually this is not about, it's about what you want to do, what you're interested in. And I think that the recognition from galleries or, you know, is often about people who are doing things that are really different.
Yeah.
And that's got to come from something deeply driving within you for that kind of uniquely different output to come. I don't think you can create that. I don't think you can make that. I think it has to come from something that is slightly perhaps odd, off ball. And actually, for lots of us, that's not necessarily what we want.
Yeah.
You know, following what you want to do is perhaps more important. And maybe the fact that more people are interested in making work like abstract landscapes, for lots of people, it's an easy crossover point between work that they like as well. You know, most of us, if we went to Frieze Art Fair, we'd look at some of the stuff and think, what the hell, I don't get it. That's where the kind of, you know, the big high-end art world recognition comes from. But do you want that?
Yeah.
That's a whole other can of worms, isn't it, really?
It is. But it is all about doing what you want. And just to wrap up, a good example of this, my friend, the writer I've talked about before, he always wrote plays, and his plays were quite cozy, a bit Alan Bennett-like.
Yeah.
And that was not trendy. So he was always being invited to the BBC to develop scripts. And then they would say, we're looking for gritty, we're looking for dark, we're looking for, and that wasn't what he does. And then he's writing these novels about murder mystery, and they're quite cozy. And Richard Osman wrote his Thursday Murder Club. And suddenly John has a book contract, because now that is back in vogue or whatever. But he's doing what he's always wanted to do, and at nearly 60 he has his first ever book contract.
Yeah.
And I think that just shows that he could have gone, I'm going to try and write something about drug addicts in a Glasgow tenement, but that's not what he knows. No. And it wouldn't be genuine. So I think we just keep going, and hopefully the zeitgeist comes back round and we're fashionable again.
Yeah. It's this thing, isn't it? If you can't select the outcome, don't be led by what the outcome is going to be for something. That's where, if it goes off track.
Yes, always.
But I think all these other things, what galleries you have agreements with along the line, it's going to cut. If you're doing the work the way you should be doing the work, then it falls into line eventually. I keep thinking of what you said last week about your meditation, or it was the week before, wasn't it? About your meditation, and the guy saying at one point there'll be a big breakthrough, but don't assume that that's the breakthrough. Stay with it. And then there'll be something else that comes that's even different. And I think it's just interesting that we're so focus orientated on a result that even when it comes, we think, right, that's it. And I think that's often the way with galleries. Yeah. People think, getting my work in a gallery, that's it, that's it, that's the thing. It's not. It's just one part along the way.
Yeah.
So, yeah, lovely. Okay. See you next week then.
See you, everybody.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Dog's taking her toy to meet the DHL man. Very sweet.
Please play with it.